You're listening to Radio MD. She's a chiropractic holistic physician, best-selling author, international speaker, entrepreneur, and talk show host. She's Dr. Suzanne Bennett. It's time now for Wellness for Life Radio. Here's Dr. Suzanne.
Back in the early 1990s, my son Cody was 15 months old when he stopped walking after spiking fever of 106. Now, this was after routine MMR and chickenpox vaccine. After seeing several doctors, he was finally diagnosed with cerebellum meningitis, and my husband George and I were super scared for his life, and we really didn't know if he would ever be the same happy and active child. This catastrophic event is what got me as a chiropractor to go deeper into natural and environmental medicine. And thankfully, he fully recovered from the vaccine reaction and started walking again within a few weeks. Today, we have Dr. Tom Cowan, a medical doctor specializing in nutrition, anthroposophical, and herbal medicine. He is also the best-selling author of Vaccines, Autoimmunity, and the Changing Nature of Childhood Illness, and is here to discuss how high amounts of vaccines, and that could be up to even 70 vaccines by the age of 18, can possibly have adverse effects on your child's immunity, gut health, and modern illnesses. Now, welcome, Dr. Cowan. Thanks so much for being here on Wellness for Life. And before I start digging deep into vaccines and autoimmunity, I'd like you to answer, what does anthroposophical mean, meaning anthroposophical medicine?
That's a medicine that was started by a guy named Rudolf Steiner, who also started Waldorf schools and biodynamic farming. And it's basically a way of seeing the world. And out of that comes a way of doing medicine.
Well, you know what? I want to just thank you for giving me a copy of your book. First of all, it's super interesting, all the things that you're saying in that book. And you mentioned that Dr. Steiner's very early on had a big impact on you while you were, I think, in medical school. Is that correct?
Yeah, I heard about anthroposophy and the work of Steiner actually while I was in the Peace Corps, which was before medical school. So I've been involved in this for 40 years or so.
That's fantastic. And that's what I'd love to, you know, have you here to share about. You know, my son, Cody, is one of many millions, thousands, millions of children having adverse vaccine reactions. But you know, before the big one, the cerebellum meningitis, he already had asthma at 3 months old. He had severe allergies to food and environments and, you know, multiple chemical sensitivities. And this was really early on in the early 1990s when allergy was just not so common. Sure, we saw some of the kids, you know, but very rarely would you see these types of anaphylactic reactions the way Cody had back then. And today, one in like 2.5 American children have an allergy. So I'd like your take on what is pushing and causing such a higher rate of allergies in our kids today.
So the main point about writing this book was not just about vaccines, but to put the changing situation of childhood illness into perspective and to understand how it came about. So like you said, you know, when I was in grade school, there was one child with asthma in the whole school. And now, you know, it's something like 10% or so of American children have some kind of respiratory dysfunction. So there's been a huge change in the disease characteristics of American children. And the reason behind that, in my opinion, is we actually have two immune systems, not an immune system like we commonly speak about. And the way that it works, if I can just go through that for a minute, because I think it'll help your listeners understand this from a bigger perspective. So if you take a viral disease like chickenpox, and if you've never encountered chickenpox before, the virus gets in and infects, you know, hundreds, thousands, maybe even millions of cells, particularly along the respiratory tract. And the body says, well, we don't want these infected cells. So it mobilizes the cell-mediated immune system, which is based in the white blood cells, to essentially digest and excrete those infected cells. the important point to realize about the cell-mediated process is the cell-mediated immune response is actually what we call being sick, meaning fever, rash, mucus, cough, all that stuff which we associate with being sick. It's not actually the virus that makes us sick. The virus triggers a cell-mediated response, and the cell-mediated response makes us sick. And the question one could ask is, how do I know that? And the reason I know that is because you can infect somebody with, say, chickenpox and then give them prednisone, which stops the cell-mediated response, and they won't be sick. They could even die of the infection, but they won't have like a fever or cold or flu-like symptoms. So we know very well that it's the cell-mediated immune response that makes us sick. And then that usually goes on for about 7 to 10 days. And then, because we don't want to have chickenpox over and over again in our life, that would be just not a good design plan, we have a second immune system called the humoral immunity, which makes antibodies to a piece of the chickenpox virus. So we remember it, and we don't have to get the cell-mediated response involved and for any subsequent times we encounter chickenpox. And so with every human illness up until, you know, the modern era, there was this two-step process. Cell-mediated to clear it, antibody response to remember it. And when those two things happen in that order, the immunity from whatever it is, chickenpox, measles, mumps, is almost 100% for life. Nobody gets chickenpox twice. Nobody gets measles twice. That just never happens. So that's the normal immune system and how it works. What happened with the vaccines is, it was basically the theory is, we're now going to decide to bypass or eliminate the cell-mediated response. Depends a little bit on which vaccine you're talking about. But basically the strategy is to stimulate the antibody response without a prior cell-mediated response. And I would point out that that's the first time that that's ever happened to human beings. Previously, it's always in the order of cell-mediated, then humoral. So now we decided to just stimulate the antibody response and not have a cell-mediated response. The reason for that is if you gave somebody a vaccine and stimulated a cell-mediated response, you would make them sick, and then the parents would complain that you just made my child sick, and so that wouldn't work. So that's the whole point. Now, the second point to realize, if you put, say, diphtheria toxin and salt water and vitamin C or a preservative into a needle and inject that into somebody, they're not going to make antibodies to diphtheria because the body doesn't recognize that. So you have to use what's called an adjuvant, which is typically aluminum, but it can be things like fetal DNA, and, you know, there's a lot of different other adjuvants that are used. The point of an adjuvant is to irritate the immune system to force it to make antibodies. Now, these antibodies that are made they're not specific to the whatever's in the vaccine, like the diphtheria toxin. You will make antibodies to the diphtheria toxin, but you'll make antibodies to everything else in the vaccine and possibly even things that you're eating or consuming, you know, not related to the vaccine. Because we don't have an adjuvant, a medicine, to make you make antibodies to only diphtheria. So the strategy is to make you make antibodies. So that's the theory of the vaccine program. Now, getting to your question, why is there so much autoimmune disease? The definition of an autoimmune disease, including asthma, allergies, Crohn's, rheumatoid arthritis, Hashimoto's, etc., is somebody with too many antibodies. So the question that everybody should ask is, how come we have 150 million people with too many antibodies? And I would submit that even though it's not the only reason, Certainly, if you're giving people essentially medicine to make them make antibodies, maybe that's the reason.
Got it. Yeah. You know, you may, while you were speaking about all this, it's so clear that our immune system is pretty much, the way I look at it, is more in the haywire. It just is not functioning optimally. It's not functioning, as you said, the two-step way, so that we can truly build a natural immunity against disease. And then you mentioned about these adjuvants. These are toxins that, or chemicals that are used within the vaccine itself, that actually triggers our body in a way to create what's called molecular mimicry. Our body attacks our own tissues looking for these toxins as well. And I think there's a lot of individuals, a lot of children are allergic to egg per se. They have egg allergy, and I think the MMR vaccine is prepared and grown in an albumin. I believe that's the case.
Yeah,
is that...
all the live viral vaccines are grown on chicken eggs.
That's
There's
right.
also soy proteins and wheat proteins in vaccines. There's also, we think, peanut products, although it's actually not required of the vaccine manufacturers to tell us what's in the vaccines. Those are proprietary information. But it's like I say, if you inject a person with a medicine to make them make antibodies along with eggs and peanuts, proteins, then a certain percentage of them will develop antibodies to peanuts and eggs. I mean, I don't know what else one would expect to happen.
Right.
That's exactly
yes.
what does happen. And the clinical result of that is somebody who's, quote, allergic to eggs or peanuts or whatever else is around. Or maybe even not eggs and peanuts, they're just in a heightened allergic state. And so whatever they happen to encounter, they'll make excessive reactions to. The point is, there's no way around that if you're going to vaccinate. That's just part of the theory. You can't make a, quote, safe vaccine, because if you give just the antigen, just the diphtheria, your body doesn't react. So you have to stimulate an antibody response. That's the whole point.
Right. You know, one of the other reasons I think that a lot of children, after working with Cody and learning all about some of the deeper root causes of Cody's illnesses, that's when I started doing a lot more work in allergies and changed my whole sports medicine practice into more allergy and environmental medicine. And one of the things that I learned quite a bit in the early 90s was about gut health. And Cody was a C-section baby. He was not inoculated with, the natural microbiome from my vagina, and that made a huge impact in a negative way, obviously, in developing in his immune system. Can you speak a bit about gut health and vaccine, please?
Well, as you say, you know, the normal situation is you're essentially you're born with a sterile gut, and then you go through the birth canal, and the mother's bacteria that live in the vagina through the birth canal, that gets swallowed, and that becomes the blueprint for the child's microbiome or gut flora. We know from years of studies that when you inject people with various toxins and you cause these inflammatory reactions, that can have an adverse effect on the health and diversity of the child's microbiome, in other words, the bacteria and microorganisms that live in their gut. And when that happens, the gut becomes inflamed and leaky, and then you get antigens, which are proteins, leaking into the bloodstream, which then your body reacts against. And that's another course of action or a sequence of events that can lead to a diagnosis of autoimmunity. So all these things are related, and you can, of course, get gut health problems not related to vaccines from glyphosate and poor food and not eating you know, cultured food and lots of other reasons. So it's not that vaccines are the only problem we have, but it's such an overriding issue because we're talking about a hyper-stimulated humoral immune system, which is the hallmark of all these various diseases that are such high levels these days. And you can't get around the fact that that is exactly the goal of the vaccine program. Maybe not the goal, but it's the unintended goal or consequence of national vaccine program.
I would love to ask you a question because on this, on autism. When I started studying autism back in about 15 years ago, the rate in America was about 1 and I believe it's 120s, in the 120s. And then it went back, it kept on going down, creeping down to 1 in 75, 1 in 69. Today, in your book, you say it's 1 out of 36 children. And you, do you believe that vaccine is the one of the core reasons why this is happening?
Yes. And there's so much evidence that that's the case that I don't think anybody who in an unbiased way looks at the literature around vaccines and autism would doubt it. Not only individual cases, but unlike what we're told, most of the data that's been done on vaccines and autism absolutely confirms that there's a connection. And nowadays, people are saying things like, there is no epidemic of autism. The autism rate is the same as it was 100 years ago, which kind of boggles the mind to think about it. Because so the first described case of autism was 1937. So if we're saying that there was just as many autistic children as in 1920 as there were in 2018, that must mean that there wasn't a single human being alive, doctor or otherwise, who could actually recognize a case of autism. I don't know if people have seen children who are severely autistic, but I can tell you, having, you know, worked and lived in autistic community, you know, communities that take care of autistic people for literally years, it's not hard to identify that something is different about that child. And the fact that nobody brought that up before 1937 is mind-boggling. The second thing is, if about 75 to 80% of autistic people, when they're adults, need institutional care, yet there's almost no 60-year-olds in institutional care for autism. So the question is, what happened to all of them? There should be, you know, 100,000 60-year-old autistics in institutional care, and yet there's almost none. So if it was the same rate as it was 60 years ago, you would see, you know, exactly that, you know, high amount of institutionalized 60-year-old autistic people. And I don't know anybody really who knows any 60-year-old autistic people. It's not that they've died early. It's they don't exist. And the fact that they're now saying that this is just a made-up epidemic, that these people have always been around, or that they're somehow just have a different way of doing life, frankly, is... it's just hard to imagine anybody believing that.
You're making such a great point, you know, that there aren't any older people who are autistic. They're definitely on the younger. I know of one autistic child, adult, and the oldest one that I know is in her 40s, early 40s.
Right.
And
I mean, I've known a few. They were extremely rare.
Yes.
And it's not like they slip under the rug that people don't notice them. They literally, you know, of course there's grades of autism. There's severe and so I'm talking about severely autistic people. They're not hard to identify. but apparently the, you know, leaders of academic medicine are unable to understand why nobody could identify them 60 years ago.
Right. You know,
very
I've been
simple.
A,
they didn't exist.
That's right. That's right. Since, you know, the early 90s, since Cody had such a severe reaction, I was a strong proponent. I've been strong on not vaccinating children. But in California, you and I both live in the state where Governor Brown signed an SB 277. It's called the vaccine mandate. And since 2016, all children are now forced to get vaccinated in the state of California if you want to put them in daycare or attend school. And we're really stuck here in this state. What do you advise your parents to do if they're planning on having children, or if they do have young children? What kind of advice do you give them?
I mean, my first advice is to understand, read, and look into every aspect of this situation. And I have no problem with people going to the vaccine advocates, the CDC, the American Academy of Pediatrics, and seeing what they have to say as well. The only thing I would say is it's unfortunately not enough to just say, well, there was a study that showed that with the introduction of vaccines for, say, measles, it dropped the death rate by 99%. So sometimes that's what you'll either read or you'll hear from your pediatrician. It would be nice if we lived in a world where we could hear that sort of information and say, well, that sounds good. I believe him. I trust that this may be true. The problem is, because I wrote this book, and I would say, unfortunately, had to spend a year, you know, reading the research on vaccines, because it's a pretty tedious gig, I can assure you. Mm. I actually went and read the original paper, the most cited paper, where they got this 99% reduction of mortality from, say, measles vaccine. And then you see how they came up with that number. And it's very interesting, which I think I should take a minute to go over. So if you look at the CDC's numbers for death rate from all infectious disease, including measles, since 1900 to the year 2000. And let me simplify it a little bit just to make it easier to understand. In 1910, the death rate was about 100 per 100,000 children, deaths from measles. By 1953, the death rate was about 4 per 100,000 death rate from measles. The vaccine was introduced in 1963, and by then the death rate had dropped to about 0.3 per 100,000. So we start 100 deaths, we go to 4 deaths. 10 years later, the vaccine was introduced, and we go to 0.3 deaths. So how did they get this 99% reduction? The answer is they chose the starting point 10 years before. And so it is actually true that 0.3 is about 99% reduction from 4. So they're actually accurate in the reduction. But the problem is it's also clear that 99% of the real reduction came before 1963 when the vaccine was introduced, which of course means the vaccine had nothing to do with 99% of the reduction of deaths from measles. So it's just, so the reason I say this is because when they say, you know, studies don't show that there's no connection, in my book, I actually go through in detail these studies that are referred to as the nail in the coffin of the vaccine autism connection, only to find, and I would say prove, that it turns out even those studies demonstrate clearly that there is a connection, that children with more vaccines have more autism. Even though those are the very studies that are referred to as proving there is no connection. So my main advice to people is to educate themselves. Don't believe anybody, including me, but I would say read what I have to say, and I'm not the only one who's saying this, and, you know, decide for yourself how you want to raise your children. And then I would only say that I don't know what to say about a country that doesn't allow people or parents to decide what to inject into their children.
That's such a good point. I mean, I'm constantly, you know, talking about exactly what you share as well, because I believe in the same feelings of what vaccines can do to the body and the future of our generations. You know, our generation, our young people now are going to be sicker than the first time. What the studies are showing is that our young people are going to be sicker than their past generations for the first time in history, I think, in human race. And that's really, really a scary situation. So what you're sharing is so important for people to understand and read. All parents and young people who are thinking about having children, do read Dr. Cowan's book, Vaccines, Autoimmunity, and the Changing Nature of Childhood Illness. It has so much amazing science in there, and you can decide, just as he says, you can decide on what you want to do with your children, with your life, and you know, for the betterment of your future and your kids. Thank you so much, Dr. Cowan. That was amazing information. Oh, if you've learned anything new here, and I know you probably all have, on how you can reach ultimate wellness for you and your family, please share this show with your friends and family and go to iTunes and give us some of your feedback. Your support is greatly appreciated. If you want to connect with me on Instagram or Facebook, please do so. And if you got things that you want to dig deeper into, your chronic health issues, I work with people all around the world through Skype, phone, and we can go into all the different aspects of your health, from energy to gut to autoimmunity to your brain, etc. And you can go to drsuzanne.com for my contact info. Until next time, go out there and live your best life today, full of energy, enthusiasm, and ultimate health and wellness. This is Dr. Suzanne sharing natural strategies on the Wellness for Life show right here on Radio MD. Stay well.